Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and I am flying solo again today. You know, that's why my dad quit flying airplanes. He liked it a lot better when somebody's with him. Back in the 50s, he got his pilot's license and was really excited about flying around all over Southwest Virginia. I think mom and dad disagreed on whether that should be occurring or not, but they lived in Princeton, West Virginia. You know where that is? It's a very southern tip of West Virginia. While living there, my brother was born in a sanatorium, I think they called it, in Bluefield, West Virginia. I came along a little bit later, born in South Charleston. I always called South Charleston, West Virginia, the armpit of the world because it kind of looked like that. It had the third dirtiest river in the world, was flowing down the middle of it, called the Kanawha River. Kind of split Charleston in two. That whole valley was a really good car market. There were some monster dealers there. You may have heard of some of them. Tag Galyon was one of them. I always thought that was a cool name for a car dealer. Roger Dean was a major player in that market and actually got to the point where he owned 100-plus new car dealerships all over the country. Dad used to talk about Roger Dean. He was kind of eccentric. He flew his own airplane as well. And he would go to the Charleston Airport, which is up on top of a mountain. He had courage to land there. And he was very fastidious with his clothes. And many times he would see Mr. Dean standing on the wing of his airplane and taking his pants off and putting them on a coat hanger, and then taking his coat off and putting it on a coat hanger, hang him in the airplane, and then climbing aboard. I think he was wearing underwear, but other than that, it was pretty interesting. But yeah, he became a mega dealer. There was another dealership down the road called run by a man named Jimmy Love, Jimmy Love, and he was C&O Motors. And they were a big player in the Chevrolet world at that time. Also ended up owning a bunch of different dealerships. But that was kind of the culture that we came from when we moved down here from West Virginia. And, yeah, we were mountaineers. We went from being mountaineers to, what are we down here, hillbillies, rednecks? I'm proud to be a redneck. We're volunteers. That's right. We're a volunteer state. Some people don't like being called redneck, but my neck is quite red right now from mowing. Yep, been mowing on my Kubota tractor. Got a new 52-horsepower Kubota. Never had really big toys like that. My wife said, that's what she calls them. She says, that's just a toy. It's only a tool if you use it and you don't want to. It's a toy if you use it and you want to. So I guess it is a toy. But anyway, having the equipment that you need is so important. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that this morning and how expensive it is getting to be a car dealer when it comes to tools. You know, I'm a kind of a tool guy, gadget guy. We've talked about that over the years, how I enjoy anything that moves mechanically. And cars have really become a big... Used to, you know, cars was how I made my living, and it's still how I make my living. But, you know, now old cars and stuff are a passion for me. And I can you tell? You know, I know it's really hard to tell, but I was just looking to see how many vehicles that I have sold in the last 3 years that are vintage vehicles. You know, there's a difference. I've sold... I don't know how many millions of dollars worth of new Fords and Nissans over the years. And, you know, and that's what we do. But in terms of just vintage cars, I actually sat down the other day and totaled up what I've sold over the last, since February of 2018. And I was kind of shocked. I'd never really looked at the number as a total. Now, you know, granted, most of these cars, I'd say 70% of these cars, were not mine. These were cars that I have sold for other people. And, That's so fun to do that, you know, to help them find the right place to sell the car. But anyway, on bringatrailer.com, which is one of my favorite websites, just straight sales that I have sold totaled $619,000 worth. Now, there's another whole category of cars that I have sold that have were sold as a result of BAT. Now, not that I put them on the Bring a Trailer auction, but that I connected with people who became customers of mine and ended up buying a lot of cars. That number is $719,000 worth of cars that I have sold as a result of that. I had no idea. If you'd asked me, Lenny, how many dollars worth of cars have you sold for folks since like that particular time frame? And I would say, maybe half a million. I didn't realize it was 1.3 million. So, you know, I've gotten pretty adept at this. I'm not bragging. I try not to. I'm just stating what I do. And there's, like I say, there's a lot of folks out there have old cars they want to sell. And most of those cars have been pretty special, pretty unique cars, you know. Certain vehicles that folks may have in their garage that have sat there for many, many years and rotted, they're not worth a lot of money. And really finding a place to go with them is not easy. Sometimes the best place to go with it is depends on how much they weigh, because you take them to the foundry, get them crushed, and they hand you some money. And so that has happened with some cars that I have had and traded for, and you think they're worth something. You know, Corvairs used to not be worth anything. They're starting to go up in value. Volkswagen Beetles from the 50s, 60s, and some in the early 70s are starting to go up in value. You know, there were just so many of them that they just really didn't have a lot of value. I mean, it's kind of the law of supply and demand. But a lot of them have gone by the wayside, especially ones from the 50s. I have a 1957. It's got that little small window in the back. I'd love to have like a 53 or older that have the little semaphore flags that stick up when you turn on the turn signals. This little thing plops up on the outside on the B pillar, and it's just cute. And they have little windows, and you know, some of the old, early ones had the split windows. But those things are bringing, you know, $30,000-$40,000 now. Isn't that hard to believe? I mean, that's one of the things I like about this business, is that it's never the same. Everything changes, and you just have to figure out a way to adapt to those changes. Ford has adapted very well. They have recently come out with this all-new Maverick. I'm holding a brochure in my hand. I know that's a rare thing these days. Manufacturers don't like printing costs, so they would rather just design it, lay it out on a computer, and be done with it. Let us old fogies try to figure out how to find it. But I like brochures, and people still come into the showroom and say, hey, you have any brochures on the new F-150? And I say, no, but I can print you out something. It's just not the same. But anyway, Ford has come out with a brochure of the all-new Maverick. Now, the Maverick, Ford has a real big advantage here for a short period of time, and it's because they were very secretive about this truck. And the reason they were able to be secretive is because they cut 2 years off the development time because they already had the platform. Ford calls it the C2 platform. It's a chassis, basically. It's the underpinnings of the car, and you can build anything on top of it as long as it fits into that template. So anyway, the Maverick had a great template. It was called the Ford Escape, and the Ford Escape was a very solid, very dependable platform that Ford developed, and now they built the Bronco. The Bronco Sport is built on that same chassis, and the Bronco Sport and the Maverick look like, you know, twins almost in the front. And so you can see definite family resemblance. But it has a bed on it. So four doors and a bed means that it can be used as a small truck. And it's a 4.5-foot bed. It's got some innovative features in it. It's the first standard full hybrid pickup truck in America, Ford's saying, and it has something called a 2.5-liter Atkinson cycle engine. That's hard to say. It is a four-cylinder. It's paired with a 94-kilowatt electric motor. And both of those working together generate about 191 horsepower. So when you're in that little truck and you put your foot on the gas, it's going to go. I mean, you're going to be impressed with the acceleration. CVT transmission, automatic, which are okay. They're not built for heavy towing, but they also offer the 2-liter EcoBoost gas engine, non-hybrid, with an 8-speed automatic, which is much better for towing. As a matter of fact, when have you heard of a small truck that could tow 4,000 pounds? I haven't. That's a lot of weight. Let's see. Even the standard one of the CVT will do 2,000 pounds. But get this. 500 miles of driving range on a small truck. And it starts at the base price of $19,900. To me, that's a bargain. And people say, well, I don't want a truck. You know, I like a car. I like having a place to put, you know, my stuff in the dry. Well, you know, I use a bed cover on my truck all the time, and it keeps everything dry, and it's the world's biggest trunk. It works fabulously. Now, I can't reach back and grab something, but how often do you do that anyway? You know, but it's got room for car seats. It's a bench seat in the back, bucket seats in the front that are comfortable, roomy, and gets great gas mileage. I think a lot of people are going to become truck owners because of this Maverick. And not the least of which is, as far as reasoning is concerned, is because it's just priced right. Gosh, I mean, so many people are having to finance cars for 84 months and 72 months, and who knows what's next, just to make cars affordable, with the average selling price of cars hovering around $40,000. That's crazy. But anyway, this 4.5-foot bed's kind of small, but if you fold down the tailgate, it's 6 feet. And then you have a bed extender, which is an optional, which my wife uses on her little Nissan Frontier. It's got 110-volt, 400-watt AC power outlet that's built into the bed. So that gives you an opportunity to plug things in if you want to play some beach music, you know, and out of the back of it. All kinds of neat little storage bins and divider places where you can do dividers and two-tiered loading and stuff like that. So LED cargo lighting. So you learn all this from this printed brochure. I think it's going to be a great seller for us. So we'll take our first break and we'll be back here in just a minute. And we are back. You guys watch that show Chip and Joanna Gaines? I think it's called Fixer Upper. You know, they have been real trendsetters. I mean, they're like HGTV gods. And they have, I think it's on HGTV, but anyway, those people have really impacted the way houses are, especially interiors, are designed. And they use a lot of white and gray and black. And I tell my wife, how many different combinations of white, gray, and black are they going to come up with? And so then they'll throw me a curveball and throw some blue in there. But anyway, trendsetters like that, people who, you know, break a mold and move into a slightly different direction. I always kind of appreciate that because I like change. I always have. And I was kind of stuck in the 80s yesterday talking about some of the vehicles that were really the most popular vehicles in the 80s and how they impacted that particular decade and sales numbers and stuff. But, you know, some of the cars from the 80s not only impacted that decade, but are still impacting us today. And so I wanted to talk about some of those vehicles that really mattered. They actually broadened the ideas about what a car can mean, how cars are shaped, and basically what became the supercars and the sport coupes and SUVs and trucks that we have today. So let's get into that. So the first one I want to talk about is from Mercedes-Benz. It's a 1985. It was a body style that they called the W124. These cars were bulletproof. They didn't build many of them. They were expensive. They had a sedan. They had a coupe. They had a convertible. They had a limo, and they had a wagon. That's all that Mercedes made. But basically, it was the basis of vehicles like some of the high-performance Mercedes that's done under the AMG banner. You may have heard of AMG. But some of these vehicles were trendsetters, and this one definitely was in terms of a performance sedan, a vehicle that would last and last, Original MSRP of this car in the 80s was pretty expensive. You're talking about $32,000 to buy one of these. Now, Mercedes kind of lost their way, in my opinion. I talked about that a little bit yesterday. I think their designs now are just too swoopy. I like boxes. I like the big hood ornament that they used to put on them, and they don't do that anymore, and they don't have the massive grills that they used to have. They've got more angular, slanted grill rather than being vertical. But anyway, the turning a luxury car into a performance car was definitely a trend changer. Another vehicle that some of the car magazines talk about was the Toyota FJ60. Now, you remember the FJ40, kind of a Jeep-like, very rugged, very utilitarian, nothing fancy about it. There's no electronics on or anything like that. Well, Toyota decided to change directions with the FJ60 and make it more of a family-oriented vehicle. It had not yet become the ultra-luxury Land Cruiser that it is today, but this was a major step forward for a company. It wasn't a really big volume vehicle, except around the world it sold in really big numbers. But the FJ60, they were bulletproof, and I guess a lot of people say, well, how long will these things last? Because now they're selling on eBay for $60,000-$70,000. I guess they'll just keep going. I mean, after 40 years, they're still going. The original MSRP on this vehicle was $12,000. So I tell you, another trend that was started in the 80s was all-wheel drive cars. Do you remember the first company to really come out with an all-wheel drive passenger car? Da, 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 da. Yes, correct. It was Audi. Somebody answered out there. The Audi Quattro. Quattro meant all-wheel drive. And this was a performance car, two-door. It really put Audi on the map. Now, Audi really isn't on the map anymore, not like they used to be. My brother drives Audis. He's a nut. But anyway, he's a doctor, too, so he's pretty smart nut. But he drives an Audi, what is that, A3 or something, all-wheel drive, V8 engine. It's a beast, but he's ready to trade it. Maybe he'll come to his senses and buy a Ford or a Nissan. But anyway, the Quattro was a game changer for rally cars. It really tore it up as far as the road rallying. And that's not really big around here in the United States, road rallying. We watch those videos of those guys charging on old farm roads and dirt roads and sliding sideways and flipping over, and we think they're crazy. And they probably are, but boy, they're some of the best drivers in the world. But the Audi Quattro all-wheel drive car changed that whole game, and now you see nothing but Subaru WRXs and other all-wheel drive Ford Escorts and Focuses and stuff like that. But it was an expensive car in the 80s. It was $80,000 to get one of those. I talked yesterday about another game changer. That was the Chrysler minivan. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but you talk about something that really transformed the auto industry was the Chrysler minivan. And, I give kudos to Mr. Iacocca, one of my favorite guys. Really interesting biography, if you ever have time to read about him. But the minivan market started, really, I mean, there were vans before that. There were small vans like the Volkswagen Bus, Transporter, or whatever they called it. And Chevrolet made a stab at it with the Corvair van. I think it was called the Greenbrier. You ever go to the Greenbrier up in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia? Everybody before they die needs to go to that hotel and stay one night, better two. Another game changer was the Jeep Cherokee. And, I never did really like them. I thought they were rough riding and crude, but they sold like crazy, and they really changed the game because it switched the SUVs, or made it okay to build an SUV without a frame. These vehicles had unibody architecture, which is so prevalent today. It shed a lot of weight, dropped 1,000 pounds by just removing that frame, and made it affordable for people to buy. They started, original MSRP was $5,100. That's cheap. I wish we had something that cheap now, but that was 1984. Another game changer was the BMW M Series. Now, Mercedes had the AMG, and BMW had the M Series. So you may have heard of an M3 or an M5. And so those are their high-performance BMWs. But BMW put this type of car on the map. They had it had a five-speed. It had a normally aspirated four-cylinder engine that had a lot of power for the weight of it. And it was it had swollen fenders, big wheels and tires. First time somebody put a spoiler like that on a production sedan. And so these are also bringing big money right now. An original, you know, BMW M3 from the 80s, they're up in the $50,000, $60,000 range now. They sold new for $34,000, which was a lot of money back then. Now we get to the high end. You know, the Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari, the last car that he was responsible for developing was this car, and that was the F40. And the F40 came out in 1987, and it was the first 200-mile-per-hour production car. And it set off a firestorm of development by Lamborghini and McLaren and other car companies to try to do something that this guy did. He died shortly thereafter, and then they've come out with some of their most exotic models since then. But this was kind of the pace setter for developing very high-end, expensive cars that only a few people could buy but had the capability to reach 200 miles an hour, and now that's fairly common. I know Hennessy has just built a car, John Hennessy, that has the capability. This is a street-drivable car. They'll go 300 miles an hour. What are they going to do next? I'll be back in just a minute. Well, I've talked my way out of time, so I appreciate you folks listening. And again, if you need me for any reason, call me on my cell phone, 423-552-2020. And it's My Car Guru, and we're at